Amavet Bhakti. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. April 2nd, 2014, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 6, Chapter 4, the Hamsavita Prayers, Text 24. What word do you see three times in this verse? What does that mean?
Friend.
Nayasya sakyam purusho vati sakyo. Sakava san sambasata parismin. Guno yata gunino vyakta tristes. Tasmai maheshaya namaskaromi. Fraternity, Purushaha, the living entity, Avaiti, Nos, Sakyuhu, of the Supreme Friend, Saka, the Friend, the Son, Living, Sambhasataha, of the One Living With, Pure, in the Body, Asmin, this, Gunaha, the Object of Sense Perception, Yata, just like, Guninaha, of his respective sense organ, Vyakta Dristehe, who oversees the material manifestation, Tasmai, unto him, Mahaishaya, unto the Supreme Controller, Namaskarami, I offer my obeisances. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. As the sense objects, form, taste, touch, smell, and sound, cannot understand how the senses perceive them. So can sound understand how we hear it? No. So the conditioned soul, although residing in his body along with the supersoul, cannot understand how the supreme spiritual person, the master of the material creation, directs his senses. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that supreme person who is a supreme controller. The individual soul and the supreme soul live together within the body. This is confirmed in the Upanishads by the analogy that two friendly birds live in one tree. One bird eating the fruit of the tree, and the other bird simply watching, witnessing, and directing. Witnessing and directing, not just witnessing. Although the individual living being who is compared to the bird that is eating is sitting with his friend, the Supreme Soul, the individual living being cannot see him. Actually, the Super Soul is directing the workings of his senses in the enjoyment of sense objects. But as these sense objects cannot see the senses, the conditioned soul cannot see the directing soul. The conditioned soul has desires, and the Supreme Lord fulfills them. But the conditioned soul is unable to see the Supreme Soul. Thus, Prajapati Daksha offered his obeisances to the Supreme Soul, the Super Soul, even though unable to see him. Another example given is that although ordinary citizens work under the direction of the government, they cannot understand how they are being governed or what the government is. In this regard, Madhvacharya quotes the following verse from Skanda Purana: Yata Rajana Priyatam Tu Vritya Vede Nachatamana Tato Jivon Nayat Sakya Vedi Tasmai Namoskute. What word did you hear in that verse? Sakyam again. Translation of that verse. As the various servants in the different departments of big establishments cannot see the Supreme Managing Director under whom they are working, the conditioned souls cannot see the Supreme Friend sitting within their bodies. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme who is invisible to our material eyes. Nayasya sakyam purusho vaiti sakyu sakya vasam vasad vasasata puresmin guno yita gunino vyaktidristes tasmai maheshani namaskaromi. As the sense objects, form, taste, touch, smell, and sound cannot understand how the senses perceive them, so the conditioned soul, although residing in his body along with the super soul, cannot understand how the supreme spiritual person, the master of the material creation, directs his senses. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that supreme person who is the supreme controller. So with a little bit of thought, just a very little bit of thought, for a very short amount of time, we must conclude that we are not independent in fulfilling our desires and using our senses. Isn't that true? Okay. Are we independent? Can we interact with objects of senses just by wanting to? Or do we need some sort of facilitation or permission from a higher source? Yeah, just like I have a little cold from having come from Govardhan to Belgium. So, unfortunately, it's just a small cold. But you know, if you get a bad cold, you can't smell anymore. Everybody's had this experience? So I may want to smell. I have a desire to smell. But I lose the ability to smell, and I can't control it. If we could control it, we would never get sick. Isn't that a fact? Who would ever get sick if they could control it? I mean, maybe a few strange, psychologically warped people would intentionally get sick, but most of us, if we could control it, we would never get sick.
If you want to go to school.
You don't want to go to school. But if you could really control things, you wouldn't get sick. You would just like expand yourself so you could have one person going to school and another person going to the beach. I always wanted to do that. My point is that we are not in control of our ability to interact with sense objects. Are we? Can we control them? No. I might have a desire to smell. My ability to smell is not under my control. My ability to see is not under my control. If somebody wants a beautiful woman, a handsome man, it's not that they can just get that person. Right? It's not under our control. So we don't like to think about this very much because it's a little disturbing to our ego. But with a little thoughtfulness, we can know that we're not independent. And then the next logical question for any thoughtful person who really would like to know the truth is, well, who's running the show? Somebody's deciding whether today I have the capacity to smell or I don't have the capacity to smell. Yes? And it's not me. Someone else is making that decision. If I was making the decision, I would decide things differently, for sure. And no doubt about it. So somebody, I'm dependent on something, somebody, I'm not independent. Who is that somebody? So here Daksha's saying that unseen somebody, we can't see that somebody, but he's giving us some very interesting indication about who that somebody is. He's saying that somebody is our
friend.
You see, we're not quite sure about that. First of all, we don't like to admit that we're dependent. We really don't like to admit that we're dependent. We want to say that we can do whatever we want to get whatever we want. There's a whole psychology, a whole branch of psychology practically like that. You can just get whatever you want and do whatever you want. And then we're not sure, that whatever this force or person or whatever that's controlling us, is it friendly or not? Like if some aliens came from another planet, the first thing you want to know is, well, are they friendly? Even if you meet somebody for the first time, you always want to know, are they friendly? So Dr. here is saying, no, he's friendly. This person is friendly. He says it three times. He says, what does it mean to be a friend? What does that mean? How do we define friend, yeah?
A well-wisher.
Somebody who wishes you well. Someone who wishes you well. So someone recently submitted an article to Back to Godhead about blessing. And he was saying that you should never wish anyone material happiness. You should only wish them spiritual happiness. And you have to be a very elevated soul to wish anybody anything. So we discussed it and we decided that none of those things were true. That first of all, everybody should be the well-wisher of everybody. You shouldn't say, well, I'm sorry, I can't be your well-wisher because I'm not pure enough. And we should wish well for everybody on every level. That's what it means to be friendly to every living entity. The devotees are also supposed to be friendly to every living entity. Now, someday I'm going to go through the scriptures and compile all the verses where it says that in order to make spiritual advancement, one has to be kind to every living entity and be friendly to every living entity. It's an essential part of advancing spiritually. This is one of the reasons why we're vegetarian. Like I met one woman at a Rath Yatra festival, and I was talking to her about being vegetarian. And I said, well, Jesus says that you should love your neighbor as yourself. She says, yes, that's true. I said, so who's your neighbor? She said, other Catholics. Okay. So we consider that everyone is our neighbor, and we should love everyone, even the little bug, even the little spider that was crawling in my room yesterday, even the grass, even the trees, whatever, even the people who are not our well-wishers. This is something, again, that Jesus taught. He said, it's very easy to love those who love you, but you should love those who are your enemies. You should love your enemies. You should bless those who curse you. You should do good for those who hate you. This, in the conversation between Krishna and the gopis in 10th Canto, chapter 32. So Krishna talks about this as the best person. He talks about actually 9 different kinds of relationships. And he says the best is those who love even those who do not love them in return. So the material example is the mother and father. And the spiritual example is Prahlada Maharaj, who loved a person who was trying to kill him without cause. So that is a friend. A friend is someone who wishes you well, who wants your happiness, who desires that you be happy. What else can you tell me about friends? Yeah?
They know you
very well.
Because it's kind of hard to wish somebody happiness if you don't really know what will make them happy. So if you wish somebody to be happy, you also have to know them. I mean, we can be friendly with people we don't know, but to really be a friend, you have to know somebody well. Anything else we can say about friends? Yes?
Someone we can depend on.
Oh, someone you can depend on. And this is one of the qualities of Krishna given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that Krishna is dependable. Anybody remember the example that Rupa Goswami gives? That Krishna is dependable? No, he gives two examples. Maybe three, but he gives at least two. Yes? That Krishna keeps his promise, that he's going to protect his devotee. So therefore it says the devotees will sleep with their doors open at night. They just don't worry. They figure Krishna will protect me from the demons. And what about the demons? Anybody remember Rupa Goswami's example of the demons? How the demons know they can depend on Krishna? Not to kill them, by the way. That's not the right answer. So the demons depend on Krishna, that if they follow the rules, that he won't kill them. That if they follow the universal rules. You know, there's even a heavenly planet for demons who follow the rules. This idea that, you know, believers go to heaven and atheists go to hell is not supported by the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam has the subterranean heavenly planets for pious and moral atheists. Of course, they're not permanent positions. Material heavens and hells are not permanent. But the fact is that Krishna will even send atheistic people who hate him to a heaven, which is described as more opulent than Indra's heaven, if they follow his rules. Right? He doesn't use nepotism. So a friend is dependable. When a friend says something, you know that they're going to do it. Yes? What else can we say about friends?
A friend points out mistakes.
A friend will point out mistakes also. So that's part of being a well-wisher, isn't it? Part of being a well-wisher is not that just that you're a flatterer, but that you also will say to somebody, excuse me, I don't think this is very good for you. And why do we take that from a friend? Yes?
First of all, we have some relationship and we already are convinced that he's a well-wisher.
Yes, we trust them. We're convinced that they are a well-wisher, and therefore they're not saying anything out of envy or malice or pride or something. And a friend will also do things for you. They'll practically do things for you. They're not just a well-wisher, but they'll be active as far as they possibly can. Isn't that a fact? Don't our friends do something for each other? I was just saying, my god-sister, Lakshmimoni, recently had hip replacement surgery. So one of her good friends, Akuti, had put out a call for donations. She had requested $8,000, actually.
Mass collection.
What?
Mass collection.
A mass collection, yeah. Actually, they collected well over $10,000. So I was just reading, Lakshmimoni wrote a little letter, and she said getting these donations from so many devotees all over the movement was one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, experience she's had in the Hare Krishna movement. That she saw how many people had so much friendship for her from all over the world. You know, and all different, I mean, there were GBCs, there were sannyasis, there were god brothers and god sisters, all, from, you know, all devotees from all over who helped contribute to her in her time of need. So a friend does that also. A friend helps you. So here we're talking about what specific help is our supreme friend doing for us. What is Doctor talking about here as a specific friend? What is he doing? He's enabling us to... interact with sense objects. So the supreme friend is giving us the facility to interact with sense objects as we desire. He's fulfilling our desires. As Prabhupada says here in this purport, this is a recurring theme. The conditioned soul has desires and the supreme soul fulfills them. So don't you do that for your friends? You not only want them to be happy, but you do things to make them happy. If you know that your friend wants to eat something, you try to get that food for them. If you know your friend wants a certain item of clothing, you try to buy that for them. If you know your friend wants to go to a certain place, you try to arrange to go there with them. Isn't that what we do for our friends? We try to fulfill their desires. We make an effort as far as is within our power to try to fulfill their desires. That's why Lakshmimoni was so moved. You know, she had a desire to fix her physical problem, and she had so many friends, thousands and thousands of friends all over the world, who said, yes, we'll help you fulfill your, we'll facilitate your fulfilling your desire. So this is one of the main relations between the Lord and the living entity, Eka Bhavanami Obhidhati Kaman, or as it said in the Isha Upanishad, he's a self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. And of course, Krishna's supreme abode is an abode of desire fulfilling. Chintamani Prakarasadvishnu Kalpavriksha Lakshavritesh. It's made at the very ground is desire fulfilling. The trees are desire fulfilling. The essence, we talk about the devotees, and we say we're talking about how the devotees can fulfill all the desires of everyone. So this is the whole mood of the eternal truthful place, the place of ultimate truth, the place of ultimate reality, is that everyone's desires are instantly and immediately fulfilled. Of course, the conditioned soul's desires are not instantly and immediately fulfilled. How are the conditioned soul's desires fulfilled? How does Krishna fulfill the desires of the conditioned soul?
Through karma.
Through karma. So how does he do that? What does he do exactly?
He checks, first of all, whether this kind of disqualification will be good or bad.
Oh, that's only for his devotees.
Okay.
It's only for his devotees. That's only when you have both a desire for material life and a desire for spiritual life. That's in a particular instance. That's like if a student comes to the college and says, I really want to take this module, I really want to get an education. Do you think it's okay if I go for the weekend to Paris? You know, how will that affect my education? And then the teacher may say, well, I don't think that'll matter. You know, go for the weekend, it's fine. Or the teacher will say, well, you know, we have a big exam on Monday, I don't think it's a good idea. But that's for a student who's already... So if one says to Krishna, Krishna, I want Krishna prema, I want pure devotional service, and I also want, you know, a new red Jaguar. So Krishna might say, okay, that won't hurt, go ahead. I'll facilitate it. Or Krishna might say, no, that's not going to work out well for you. If you get a brand new red Jaguar, it's going to disrupt, so I won't give. So he does like that. But for the conditioned souls who haven't said, I want spiritual life, how does he do it? Yes?
He gives direction to previous actions.
He gives direction, yes. Sarvashicharambhati sandhavishtam, matasmachyurganamapohanam. So, matasmachyurganamapohanam, Krishna gives the knowledge. Okay, you want to do this. This is what you want. This is the sense facility you want. This is how you do it. Do this. Like we read in the Bhagavad Gita 7:21, that Krishna makes your faith steady in a demigod. Isn't that interesting? Krishna says, don't worship demigods. And then he says, but if that's what you want to do, I'll give you the faith. I'll give you the conviction. I won't just give you the knowledge, I'll give you the conviction. I'll give you the faith. And Krishna will supply. Yes, do that. You're saying, I want this, I want this, I want this. Krishna's saying, well, okay, worship this demigod, or do this person, or do this thing, do this process. So Krishna fulfills the desires of the conditioned soul, basically by giving you faith, by giving you direction, by giving you information, by putting you in touch with the right people and right circumstances to fulfill our desires. So who could be a better friend than that? And what's really interesting is that Krishna remains this kind of friend regardless of whether we acknowledge him or not, or whether we even like him. So that's really astonishing, because I don't think most of us would do that. I don't think that I would remain somebody's friend if they never acknowledge my friendship at all. If they pretend that I'm not there, I mean, how long are you going to keep being someone's well-wisher and helping them and facilitating them if they never, ever, ever say that you're there? If they take all the credit for everything you do? I mean, how long are you going to be a friend of someone who takes all the credit for your help? Not very long. What to speak of if they actively deny your existence? You know, well, you're not really there. I mean, we feel really hurt when people do that, right? We really go out of our way for someone and they say, well, what did you do? You didn't do anything for me. I did it all myself. I don't need you. Where were you? I'm like, wait a minute. It's very painful. It's very painful. Actually, I was just talking to Shikara Maharaj in Vrindavan, and he was saying how that the way that Krishna handles all this rejection of all these unlimited, billions of conditioned souls is he just puts himself under yoga maya and he's dancing with the gopis, and he's on a level he's not even aware of it. You know, he just kind of blocks it. That there's all these billions of souls that are going, I hate you, I hate you. You're not really there. Or you're really there, but you're not my friend. Right? This is basically how the conditioned souls act. No. You're not really there. I'm doing it all independently. This is just a machine. It's just a machine that came about by some random forces of nature. There's nobody behind it. It just, you know, we have so many people on the planet now who are propounding this philosophy that all material nature is just a machine. Or, you know, yes, you're there, but I don't like you. I don't trust you. You're not really my friend. You know, or what Daksha here is doing is, yes, you're my friend, please give me what I want in the world. I mean, that's a little bit. At least he's acknowledging that the Lord is there, and he's acknowledging that the Lord is his friend. He say, okay, you're my friend, now do what I want you to do. So even that's a little uncomfortable, isn't it? When someone says, well, you're my friend, you know, you're supposed to do, you have to do this for me, do what I want. You're like, well, So, but at least Daksha's doing that. Of course, it's not enough, unfortunately, for our poor Daksha, that he does that. It's not enough. It doesn't, as we talked about the other day, it doesn't get to the root of his problem, and therefore he commits the same mistake all over again, and he gets himself into trouble all over again. So just offering respects to his unseen friend with the purpose of taking something from his unseen friend, ostensibly for service, but ultimately for his own sense gratification, isn't enough to really give Daksha ultimately the supreme goal of life. But I like that he says this. You know, he says, Namaskaromi, I offer you my obeisances. At least that. At least an acknowledgement. I can't see you, but I acknowledge that you're there. I can't see you, but I acknowledge that you're there, and I offer my obeisances. Prabhupada compares this to the government. So we don't see the government in this room, but the government is in this room. The placement of the electrical outlets, the wiring done in the walls, all the regulations for a building. That's under the control of the government. That the influence of the government is here. And if you commit a crime in this room, the government will very quickly be here. You know, in a civilized country. Yes? Of course, they have to move from one place to here, whereas Krishna is immediately there. He doesn't have to transport from one place to another. So a sane person acknowledges their debt to the government. That's the same person. The same person doesn't say, well, what's the government doing for me? I mean, even in countries I've been in with a highly corrupt government, still the government's doing something. They're still doing something. They're still making the roads, and they're still putting out the lights and something. You know, there's not very many places in the world where the government does nothing positive for the citizens. So a sane person acknowledges, yes, there's a government. I pay my taxes. I follow the rules. There's some acknowledgement like that. Even if you're not going to serve the government, you know, go into the military. But some kind of acknowledgement. In fact, when Krishna speaks with the gopis about the nine kinds of persons, he talks about, in the last category, the ungrateful person. You know, he talks about different categories of ungrateful persons. So one ungrateful person is just unaware of what others do for them. They just don't even notice. I'm sure we've run into people like that, right? We do things for them, and they don't even notice that we've done anything for them. They're so self-absorbed that, you know, we could be killing ourselves all day sacrificing for them, and they have no awareness at all. And then there's the people who do know, but they have hatred and envy towards those who help them. Sometimes with cause, sometimes the person who helps them is also guilty of something. And the worst is without cause. And the worst is those who try to actively harm those who help them. That is the least ungrateful. But in Mahabharata, there's a whole section about how sinful it is to be ungrateful. So at least some gratitude. At the very bottom line is to acknowledge I'm not independent in fulfilling my desires. I'm not even independent in interacting with my sense objects. I cannot just say I want to taste something and I will be able to taste it. I don't have that power. I can't just say I want to hear something and I'll be able to hear it. It's just with my friend Narayani. She's lost most of her hearing in one ear. So to acknowledge, I'm not independent. I'm not independent in being able to walk. I'm not independent in being able to talk, to think, to anything. I'm just not independent. I'm not the controller. Let me acknowledge that there's somebody who's running the show. And let me offer my respects to that person. That's bottom line. That's the beginning of just being human and being civilized. And then beyond that would be to meditate on how friendly and how loving and giving that person is. Not just to say he's a friend, but to meditate on how is he a friend? In what way is he a friend? That he's giving us all, he's giving all of us facility to fulfill our desires, even our nasty desires, even our harmful desires, even our desires that are opposed to him. He's giving us all facility to do that. Okay, we have to work for that, but he's giving us the facility to work for that. He's giving us our freedom. It's also the purport to 721, I think it is, in Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada says, without the Lord facilitating, we wouldn't have any freedom. That you might ask, well, why does the Lord give us faith and facilitation to do things that are bad for us? Because otherwise there would be no meaning to freedom. I mean, the only time that the Lord doesn't is when we ask for contradictory things. When we say, Lord, I really want to serve you, but I also want this Jaguar car. You know. And he's taking into account, well, what do you want more? What's more important to you? And so he'll adjust accordingly. I mean, conversely, if you say, Lord, I really want to serve you, but you actually just want material life, then you may cut down the service aspect. Huh? You know, okay, Lord, I worship you, but I really just want to enjoy the world, then he may cover so much you're thinking of him also, depending on which desire is stronger. So what a nice friend. I mean, how can we find a better friend than that? I don't see that materially anyone is capable of being this level of friend. I just don't see it. I mean, I'm not capable of being a friend on that level. That I would facilitate people doing things that harm me just to make them happy. Wow. I mean, a friend is someone who wants the friend to be happy, even at their expense. But, I mean, I have a limit. You can be happy at my expense, but up to a point. There's going to be a point that I'm going to say, sorry, if that's what makes you happy, forget it. Goodbye. But Krishna's not like that. He says, if that's what makes you happy, then I'll facilitate it, whatever makes you happy. Even if it's something harmful, even if it's really nasty towards me, I'll facilitate that. So what an amazing friend. So to really meditate on what kind of friend this is. That he never, ever, 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 ever does anything that is selfish or envious or malicious towards anyone. Just simply doesn't. I mean, he may appear to in his Jirodhata feature, but that's also loving. You know, when Krishna talks to the demons and they say, Dear Lord, like Pundraka, messenger, you know, give up your weapons. And Krishna says, okay, I'll give you my chakra to cut off your head. But he also actually loves Pundraka. How do we know he loves Pundraka? Because Pundraka attains Swarupasiddhi. That's love. That's amazing love. That's beyond. And when Pudri Vijayanidhi heard how much love Krishna had for Putana, he immediately felt ecstasy and started having the sattvika bhavas. That's inconceivable. You know, again, we tend to do the opposite. If somebody's done one nice thing for me, but their purpose of doing that one nice thing was to harm me, it was to trick me, they did something nice for me for the purpose of tricking me so they could harm me, then I don't see the nice thing as nice at all. I said, well, yeah, they did something nice, but what was their motive? And Krishna just says, oh, somebody did something nice for me. Well, she did something nice because she was trying to kill you. Oh, it doesn't matter. She just did something nice for me. You know, it's sort of amazing, you know, understanding Krishna. He's sort of simple. He's a young boy, and he's very simple. Oh, then she did something nice for me. Oh, how nice. You know, that thief and cheater, he just said my name. Well, he didn't really say your name. He said the name of his son. Yeah, but it's also my name. Nice. Don't let him suffer. He said my name one time. Okay. I mean, what a nice friend. Who can find a friend like that? So just start meditating on the friendship of Krishna. And then, what about to start reciprocating? So, here Daksha isn't exactly reciprocating. I mean, he's offering these prayers, but he's offering these prayers to get something. He's not really offering these prayers in a view of reciprocating. So at least to acknowledge, at least to offer obeisances, but then further than that, that's pretty much where Dr. goes. He acknowledges, he offers obeisances. Good start. Then from there, to really meditate on how is Krishna a friend. Meditate on Krishna's qualities. And then to think, well, what about me? Well, how am I his friend? How am I behaving? And perhaps this is a real reason why we don't really like to meditate on the fact that somebody is controlling my senses and that somebody is a nice person. Because if we really meditate on that, then if we have any human qualities, we're going to want to reciprocate. And we'll have to look at ourselves honestly and say, well, what kind of a friend am I? Oh, many years ago, I was in a community similar to the thing that had just recently with Lakshmi Moni. One of my godbrothers needed some dental work, and his insurance company would only pay for half. And his wife was talking to me. We were very good friends. Actually, she's from Belgium. And she was talking to me, and she said, you know, we were kind of in anxiety, how are we going to pay for this dental work? And I didn't say anything to her, but I went around the community and made a collection. I didn't tell her I was going to do that, or she would have said, no, don't do that. So I just did it. So then I gave them all the money. And they were talking to me, and the man said, I feel like, you know, my teeth now belong to the community. He said, I feel like everything I eat, everything I say, you know, should be for the glorification of Krishna and the devotees. And in other words, he was feeling that he had to reciprocate. In the sense that, I've been given so much, I should also give. So again, perhaps that's the reason why we don't meditate. Because as soon as we meditate, we'll start saying, oh, what do I do for you? How am I a friend? First of all, do I really trust that you're my friend? Do I just say that? Krishna's the friend of everybody. Okay. You know, or do I believe that? Do I believe that Krishna is my friend? And am I Krishna's friend? So if I really, really believe that Krishna is my friend, I was meditating on this recently in Govardhan when Prasanta Devadasi was giving classes on the killing of Deinakasura, how Deinakasura represents the Lord of ignorance, the false ego. You know, I'm not going to surrender to Krishna. And I hadn't thought about it before, but how when, you know, donkeys attack with their hind legs, so for Deinakasura to attack, he had to show his rear end to the Lord, you know, turn around, show his backside to the Lord, and kick him. Nasty, huh? Yeah. But she was talking about how we have this false ego, we don't want to surrender. I was really meditating on, you know, why don't I just, like, surrender completely? I mean, there was a time, a long time ago, when I thought I was surrendering completely. I really believed that. I believed, yes, I surrendered completely. So I wonder, you know, why have I not surrendered completely? And it's because I don't trust that Krishna is my friend. That's the basic bottom line. And I think, well, Krishna, if I surrender to you, what will you do to me? You know, what will happen? You'll start messing with my karma. And who knows what you're going to do? So, you know, you hear these stories. Or I know one of my friends who prayed to Lord Nisingadev, please help me to surrender, and the next day her husband started having an affair with somebody. You know, so you hear these stories and you're like, are you really my best friend? You know, if I say, Krishna, I surrender, will you cut off my fingers? Will you take away my husband? You know, what are you going to do? You're going to burn my house down? You know? You're going to make it so that nobody in the Hare Krishna movement likes me anymore? And they'll say, you can't come to my temple, and you're just sitting out on the street crying without friends. I mean, what are you going to do to me if I say I surrender? So the first problem is, do we really trust that Krishna is our friend? Or, you know, I say, Krishna is my friend. Yes, Krishna is my friend. But do I believe that in my heart? Or do I think that I'm more my own friend than Krishna is? That I know better what's good for me than Krishna knows? Which is logically an absurd idea. It's completely absurd. How many of us have done things we were sure were going to be good for us and they turned out badly? Half of you have never had that experience. How many of you have done things that, you know, ended up in situations that you thought would be just terrible and they ended up being wonderful? So you have no experiences in life. So that means we're not very good judges, are we? I can look at a situation and say, boy, that would be terrible. I don't want anything to do with it. And then I end up there and I think, this is great. Why did I not want to do it? So do I know what's good for me? What's the main evidence that I don't know what's good for me? What's the number one huge evidence, yes? I have a material body. If I really knew what was good for me, would I be in this body? Is this a very nice body? Anybody have a like really, really nice body? I mean, everyone's here is very attractive, but that's not what I meant. I mean, is your body like really nice? All the stuff that comes out of it, is it nice? Any nice stuff come out of it? No, it's not very nice. So how did I get this nasty thing? It's a prison uniform. It's a really nasty thing. You know, I must not make good decisions. That's my primary evidence. I just don't make good decisions. So why do I trust myself? I thought, I said, Krishna, I want to decide what I want to do, and you just facilitate it, okay? I don't want to turn things over to you. And he's like, okay, let me know. Yeah. So if I really believe that Krishna is my friend, I'll trust him. And I'll say, you know, why don't you be the captain of my ship? They have these stickers, God is my co-pilot. And I thought, why don't you be God's co-pilot? You know, why don't you let him be the pilot? But that seems to take a long time. It seems to take a long time before we really say, okay, I trust you. And instead of just asking you to fulfill all my desires, I'm going to ask you, please give me the best thing. Please take me the best way. You know what's best for me. You know, it's like now they advertise pharmaceuticals on television and in magazines, so people will go to their doctor and say, give me that medicine. They advertise to the public. But if the doctor is really a good doctor, you shouldn't have to do that. If you're really competent, you should be able to go to the doctor and say, you give me what's best for me. Of course, not that you can trust doctors for. In theory, at least, it should be like that. So we should be able to go to Krishna and say, you know, I really don't know what's good for me. I mean, look, I have this desire, this desire, this desire. I have all these desires. Here's my whole big bag of them. Do with them as you like. Because I don't know what to do with them. I don't know if they should be fulfilled. I really don't know. I don't know how they should be fulfilled. And I don't know what's best for me. I trust you. And then the other side is, how am I being a friend? First of all, being a friend by trusting my friend. It's painful. If you're someone's friend and they don't trust you, isn't that painful? It's very painful. So first way we can be a friend to Krishna is by trusting him. We can't do it artificially. It's not that you can go after this class if you don't really trust Krishna and say, Krishna, I trust you, I surrender. Because the first thing he'll show you is that you don't really. But to want to get to that point, then I say, Krishna, I trust you. Whatever you want to do for me, I accept. I accept that everything you do for me is good. Prabhupada talks about this in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 15:15, which we quoted earlier, Sarvashtacharam Hrisandavishtavatasmachiganapohanamcha. He said that Krishna, for the living entities, he's the sunshine. He's the moonshine. He provides the juice and all vegetables. He's the digestive fire. And Krishna talks about this in chapter 15. And he's the Vedic knowledge. So he facilitates our material life and he gives us a spiritual knowledge. So first way I can be Krishna's friend is to trust that he has good intentions for me. And to trust that he knows more than me. What a radical concept. That maybe God knows more. Maybe he can see the big picture. Which I can't. I can see, you know, a few millimeters ahead, maybe, cloudy, and he can see the big picture. Another way I can be Krishna's friend, of course, is to work to fulfill his desires. So I can be Krishna's friend by trusting that he is going to satisfy all my desires perfectly if I let him do it the way he wants. Because that's the experience, like Dhruva Maharaj said, now I feel completely satisfied. The pure devotees are not materially detached because they become stones. They're materially detached because they're full, because all of their desires are satisfied. If I have a wonderful meal that's full of varieties of tastes and nutritious, and then if you ask me if I want to eat something else, I will say no, I'm satisfied. So that is the explanation of all the liberated souls. I'm completely satisfied. So to trust that, and then to say, Krishna, how can I please you? You're doing so much for me. What can I do for you? How can I satisfy you? How can I make you happy? How can I be your friend? How can I take happiness at your happiness? In fact, that is ultimate friendship, is that two friends neither consider their own happiness. Each person is considering the happiness of the other. Each friend is thinking how to make the other happy. They're competing as to how to make each other happy. So that is our ultimate relationship with Krishna, that I'm trying to make Krishna happy and he's trying to make me happy. I think, Krishna, how can I fulfill your desires? That's the main reason that we're engaged in book distribution and chanting the holy name in public and distributing prasad and preaching. We want to make Krishna happy. And Krishna's happy when people become spiritually happy. Krishna's happy when people come out of illusion. So we do that for him. So these are the questions we can ask. Am I becoming Krishna's friend? We're not talking in a rasa sense. It's one of the 9 items of devotional service for anybody, even a Vaidhi Bhakti. But how can I become Krishna's friend? How can I trust him? And how can he trust me? And then he won't be unseen anymore. So here in the verse, Daksha's saying, we don't see him. We know he's there by his effects. Like you know the wind is there because it's moving the trees, but you don't see the air, right? Anybody see the air in this room? It's invisible. But you know it's there by its effects. We can breathe. Even though I can't perceive it. I can't. It's pressing on my skin. I don't know what it is in metric, sorry. 14 pounds of pressure per square inch, which probably doesn't make sense to any of you here. But it's pressing on our skin. And it's filling my lungs, so I know there's air here, although I can't see it and I can't feel it. So in the same way, I don't perceive that I have a friend in my heart, but I can see by the effects that he's there. However, if I start to trust him, and if I act in a way that he can trust me, he wants to be seen by me. Krishna's only unseen if we don't trust him and he can't trust us. Then he's our friend from behind a screen. He's still our friend, he doesn't stop being our friend, but he doesn't expose himself. Avajananti mamudha, manasintana masvita, parambhavam janato mamabhuta maheshwam. So if we don't trust him and he can't trust us, he'd be our friend like from a distance. But he wants to be seen. Prabhupada said that Krishna is eager to talk to us. He's eager to talk to us. The example Prabhupada gives all the time is how parents are eager to connect with their children. I want my children to talk to me. I want a relationship with them. It's natural. So Krishna wants to see us. Actually, we were also reading in that Vishwachandra Thakur's commentary in Bhagavatam 2.9 in the last of the chapter shlok, that just as the material elements enter into everything and do not enter into everything, similarly I enter into everything and do not enter into everything. Vishwachakwari Thakur was saying that the Lord is detached from the material world but attached to the devotees, and that the Lord wants to give all of his senses for the enjoyment of the devotees. Krishna wants the devotees to touch his form, the devotees to smell his fragrance, and the devotees to see his beauty. He wants to be. And Prabhupada also is saying in that purport that the Lord is the object of the senses for the devotees. So Krishna wants to be the object of our senses. Isn't that interesting? He wants us to see him. He wants us to relish him. He wants to talk to us. But we have to first trust him and have him trust us. So at least let us offer our obeisances to our unseen friend. At least let us acknowledge our unseen friend. At least, you know, namaskaromi, at least I offer you my obeisances, at least that. But to go beyond that and meditate on how he's our friend, to go beyond that and really act as if he's our friend, to really trust him and to act in such a way that he can trust us, and then he's no longer unseen. Questions, comments, corrections? Yes?
So, to explain, Krishna is our psyche, our friend. But I was wondering, because some very high devotees...
Sakha.
I was wondering, because some devotees achieve Madhurya Ras. This means he's our lover, not our friend anymore. So are we
Your lovers are also your friends.
Okay.
So that's explained by Rupa Goswami, that everything of the previous rasas is included in the higher rasas. But even in Dasya Ras, so I'm right now studying Nectar Devotion about Dasya Ras, and about the section I'm just reading. Actually, I'm reading in Nectar Devotion in two places at once. Don't ask me that. Anyway, but the section I'm reading in one of my readings, I'm a very strange person, is about the reverential devotion of sons and other subordinates, and how, like, Prajuna would only be reverential in front of Krishna. And Krishna is saying, you know, pick up your head and talk to me, and why are you using so much reverence around your father? So Prajuna is not thinking of Krishna as his buddy friend. You understand? Not like Sridham and Sudham, who say, you know, you didn't lift up Govardhan Hill, we did. Or, ha-ha, you lost, you have to carry us on your shoulders. So there, Prajuna is not thinking like that. Or like Raktak and Patrak. It's explained when Raktak was there and Krishna is talking with his intimate friends, and they're joking and they're very casual. And at one point they're all laughing. At one point Raktak starts to smile and then he stops and he thinks, no. I don't want to be so familiar. But, you know, still Raktak thinks of the Lord as his friend. Frankly, even in Shantaras, one thinks that the Lord is my well-wisher, and one thinks that I am also the well-wisher of the Lord. So Sakya can be understood, first of all, on two different levels. First, it can be understood on the level of a rasa, where one sees the Lord as an equal. And then that's true in many divisions, like there's the city friends, like who's Krishna's city friend? Uddhava, yeah. Although Uddhava is also in Dasya, primarily Dasya. Who else is Krishna's city friends? Come on, they're really famous.
Arjuna.
And the Pandavas and Draupadi. Draupadi is also one of his city friends. Those are his city friends. Then he has his country friends, like Uttava, Sridham, and Sudham. But Sakya is also one of the nine processes of devotional service. Just like we have Dasya as a process of devotional service. So that doesn't mean Dasya Ras. It's not that you say, well, I realize I'm in Madhurya Ras, so I'm not going to do Dasya of the nine processes. Actually, Krishnadas Kaviraj goes through extensive, showing that everybody in all the rasas is Das. Ekaleshwara Krishna. Everyone else is Pritha, everyone else is a servant. Even the other Vishnu expansions are Dasya. So everyone feels that Krishna is their Lord Vishnu, their friend. Even the Shantarasa persons in Vaikuntha, they feel that Lord Vishnu is my well wisher, my friend. And I am the well wisher of the Lord. They're not doing any practical service if they're on Shantarasa, but they have the sense that Krishna is my, that the Lord is my best friend. Not in a rasa sense. Do you understand the difference?
I don't just think about Dasaras. Because we know that Guru Kapandavan are not Dasaras. It's just lover and friend, but not servitor.
Well, you don't think Madhya Soda is serving Krishna?
Yeah, but she doesn't know. I mean, she's just serving because she's his mother.
But that's, she's still serving. She's still serving. You don't think the gopis serve Krishna? Of course they do. Lalita says to Krishna, you know, hey, Radharani is over there. They serve Krishna. There's a nice section in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I don't remember where it is. Anybody remember where it is? Where Krishna Das Kaviraj explains how everyone in all the rasas are serving Krishna. Anybody remember the section?
I remember the section where Krishna Das Kaviraj Swami explains how everyone, including Atmaramas and Mahavishnu and all these,
is attracted to the Lord.
Yes, because bhakti
is so attractive. But there's a place specifically where Krishnadas Kaviraj is talking about how everyone in every rasa is dasa. That there's some service that's being given to the Lord. So everybody also, these nine processes, these are nine processes even in Vaidhi Bhakti. So the gopis see Krishna as their good friend. Of course they do. I mean, even in this world, if you're married to someone, you also see your spouse as your friend. I hope. You see them as your well-wisher, your benefactor, and somebody who wishes for your happiness, and you wish for their happiness. Your relation with them is more intimate than it is just with a friend, but they're also your friend. My grown children are my friends. It's not that they're not my friends, it's just because they're my children. They're a little different friend. It's a different kind of friend, but they're still my friends. Is that all right? Anybody else? Yes? And then I have to end.
Thank you very much for creating this environment of, like, the spirit, telling about your experiences with Krishna, Krishna purifies us, and how God is surrendering to the degree that we can, and he does talk. So I was just thinking, according to my experience, it's kind of difficult when we are experiencing that. But Krishna does to us, how do we stay nice to the devotees? How do we really, when we are ourselves are experiencing something that really turbulent, and how do we continue being the same or even more kind to the devotees?
When we're going through difficulty in our lives?
Yeah.
Well, it depends where the difficulty is coming from. If the difficulty is coming through the agency of the other devotees, it's a lot harder. If the difficulty is coming because you got in a car wreck, it's not that hard to continue being nice to everybody. But when the difficulty comes when some other devotee that you really love and says, I don't like you anymore, then that's harder. We can meditate on Krishna. How Krishna is kind even to those who envy him. Krishna is kind even to those who are his enemies. Krishna hates no one. He's envious of no one. And I'm not dependent on other people treating me in a certain way in order to feel happy and to feel my connection with Krishna. Even, I mean, there are devotees in the Bhagavatam who intentionally cut themselves off from all human society so that everybody mistreated them. Who were those people? Jadvara. And his father. In a previous life. Prasaddev also did the same thing at the end of his life. Maharaj Yudhisthira did that at the end of his life. Jadvara did it for his whole life. And they intentionally lived in such a way that other people would criticize them and other people would even harass them. And they didn't care. They weren't going to look for their satisfaction in human relationships. So we can certainly, if Krishna is kind and loving, look, if Krishna is kind and loving to me, I mean, if you're really honest, if you really look, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'll just talk about me. If I'm really honest and I really look in the mirror and I see what kind of a person am I, and to what extent am I really Krishna's friend, it's sort of astonishing that he still loves me. I don't know if any of you feel that way about yourselves. Maybe you think it's perfectly normal that Krishna still loves you, and that you fully deserve everything he did, all the wonderful things he does for you because you're so wonderful. But I don't find that, especially the more I chant Hare Krishna, the more I see that there's no, I don't have any claim. What's my claim? Well, I've been chanting at least 16 rounds every day for 41 years. It's like, so what? That's like if a criminal, you know, you go into the prison and the criminals say, well, I think I'm going to stop murdering people. Is that some big credit? Is that like, does that really count for a lot? Well, I'm not going to murder people anymore. Well, good. That's just normal. It's not like, you know, I've served you for so long, I've sacrificed. So it's like, no, you're not. You're just trying to become a normal individual. So if Krishna loves me, despite the fact that I'm still extremely offensive and extremely fallen and extremely proud, I don't want to get too much into my problems. But anyway, if Krishna loves me in spite of who I am, why shouldn't I love everybody else? Is there anybody who's treated me as badly as I treated Krishna? I don't think so. That'd be pretty tough. That'd be pretty hard. Why can't I be as much of a lover and a well-wisher to my very limited extent as Krishna is with me? That doesn't mean I have to go live in the same house with everybody. You know, although Krishna loves me unlimitedly, he remains invisible until he can trust me. So I can love people from a distance. But that can help. Is that all right? That's one of the ways Krishna will trust us, is that we are also loving and kind to others, even those who hurt us. Krishna tells the gopis, the merchants are worse than those without a trace of loving affairs. He says those people who only love as much as they're loved, who calculate it. Okay, you've loved me this much, I'll love you this much in return. He said those people, they're worse than people without a tinge of loving affairs. And Vishnu Chandra Thakur says that he says there's no dharma in such persons, there's no friendship, and there's no happiness. So, that's pretty heavy. Better to be the well-wishers of everyone, even those who wish ill for us. Is that okay? Thank you.